You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, Rockets fans. Welcome to the weekend, and thanks for kicking it off with me here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast discussion of everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat on this Friday, March 22nd, the Rockets are just hours away from a huge game on the hardwood tonight, back at home against Toyota Center against the San Antonio Spurs. Houston has won 12 of its last 14, San Antonio 9 of their last 10, so both teams are hot. It's also a big game because, of course, the Rockets now tied in the loss column with the Portland Trailblazers for the number 3 seed in the West. The Spurs, at 42-30, tied with three other teams, a four-way tie all the way from 5th through 8th in the Western Conference playoff standings, and only three games back of the Rockets. If San Antonio wins this game and comes within two, considering the Rockets' schedule gets more difficult starting next Tuesday in Milwaukee for four or five games, it's not unforeseeable that San Antonio could be a threat to Houston in the playoff standings down the line. So there's plenty to play for on both sides. There's the I-10 rivalry aspect, so it should be a lot of fun tonight. And of course, whatever happens, we'll be back early Saturday morning to break it down in our usual recap style here at Locked On Rockets. Today, though, coming off a very turbulent week, I mentioned the Rockets, they've won 12 of their last 14, which is impressive, yet it's mixed with a loss by 1 point in overtime Wednesday night that was incredibly deflating on a number of levels. Certainly, the officiating, as I mentioned in our recap, was not good. Clint Capela, yet again, was bested by a more traditional big man with power, that being Jonas Valanciunas of the Grizzlies, who went for 33-15. So there's a lot of mixed feelings, I would say, about the Rockets right now. Largely positive, but coming off a game in which Harden gave you 57 and it still wasn't enough to win, I'm not going to say that everything is perfect at the moment either. So to break down what we have learned from the recent loss, from the 12 of 14 stretch, and also preview where the Rockets are at as they enter a largely more difficult stretch beginning tonight against the Spurs and certainly next week against the Bucks and the Nuggets, I'm going to be joined momentarily by a friend of mine who I think is really good at providing that type of context, that being Karthik Prasad, who you can follow on Twitter at StanfordKP. If you followed him on his Twitter timeline in recent days, you know that besides just the topical issues of each game with the Rockets, he's also been, I would say, at least mildly annoyed by some of the rest strategies. The Rockets sat out Shumpert and Nene on the front end of the Atlanta-Memphis back-to-back. On the second end of it, it looked like they were going to sit both Gordon and Nene. They did stay with Gordon missing that game, which clearly a guy shooting nearly 50% from three for the month, that could have been costly. Beyond that, though, they actually went to Nene in the second half after trying to sit him out in the first half. That's how desperate they were for someone to try and slow Valanciunas. Ultimately, it didn't work. Nene played 6 minutes, and he was a minus seven. Did not look like he was mentally ready to go. So I can understand some of the frustration, considering the Rockets do need to use this relatively weaker stretch in the schedule to bank wins ahead of the more difficult games ahead. Certainly tonight against the Spurs, but really kicking into gear next week with the Bucks and the Nuggets. Anyway, without further delay, let's head to the phone lines and get our week in review episode started right now with Karthik Prasad here at Locked On Rockets. Karthik, how are you, my friend?
Good, doing well. How are you, Ben?
Oh, can't complain. Ready to get back, hopefully, on the winning foot with the Rockets tonight. And before we get into some of the rest strategies, the things that have been more controversial over the past few games, I want to start our chat, I'm calling this a weekend review, with something I think that's going to be fairly agreeable, which is the importance of playoff seeding and specifically a top four seed with home court in the first round. Because every time I, you know, daily we track the Western Conference, we mention the results such as last night, Atlanta beating Utah, that gives the Rockets now a full three-game advantage on all competition as far as getting into the top four and maintaining a home court advantage in the first round, which is a big deal because of how challenging the run through the Western Conference and the NBA Finals would be. And every time I mention it, it seems like I have a couple of folks that say some variation of, well, is it that big of a deal? Because the Rockets, they're veteran laden. They've had a lot of big road wins this year. And my response to that is, yeah, it matters. Because if you're asking them to win four straight series, none with home court, I think we can agree that it's a pretty big deal for Houston to get home court in at least one round. Because even if they can win road games, first off, they're 25-6, I believe, in their last 31 at Toyota Center. But in my view, it's just asking too much to expect them to go, say, 95 Rockets and win on the road in every single round. Is that kind of how you look at it?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially in the first round, having home court is just will increase the odds. And, you know, I mean, we've been good at home, as you've said. We've been good at home, especially since when we've been healthy. And I think we feed off the crowd, and we know it's what to expect, which is a big deal. And so the more that they can do that, I'm all for it. And then I think it also comes with a benefit of giving them control over who they play next. So it kind of goes hand in hand with the rest of their pathway through the playoffs.
The other angle of this that's really intriguing to me is number four versus number three. I think clearly it's a big deal for the reasons that we've laid out to get home court advantage in round one. And if you had asked me a week ago, I would have said that clearly the number three seed, right now you're tied in the loss column with Portland for that, but unfortunately if it's a two-team tie, the Blazers won the season series 2-1, so in a two-team tie they would get the benefit of the doubt with the Rockets. If you had asked me a week ago, I would have said that that's a really big deal. Right now, though, I'm less convinced that it is, because the reason it was a big deal a week ago, there were a couple of assumptions being made. First, that Golden State would clearly be the one, so the three would be on the other side of the bracket. Well, Golden State's only a half game up on Denver. The Nuggets continue to pile up impressive wins, so it's incredibly possible, at least, that Denver could end up with the one seed. The other factor is that a week ago, it looked like there was some separation, Portland and Oklahoma City at 4-5, and then Utah, the Spurs, the Clippers at 6-8. And clearly, if OKC is at full strength, to me, they are the most daunting potential opponent. Right now that you have seeds 5-8 tied and Oklahoma City continues to fall back with their injuries, there are certain scenarios where the number four might be more advantageous than the number three. So while I'm not going to say the Rockets should intentionally lose games, that's silly because it's not unfathomable for the Rockets to fall into the 5-8 mix. It's not like their lead is commanding. The schedule is going to get more difficult. But to me, it's just interesting because if you had asked me a week or two ago, I thought the number three seed was a big priority. Now, it could be, but I think we're starting to see some scenarios with the West standings where the four, in some circumstances, might be better than the three. Are you seeing similar things?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think the main thing is they have the schedule. So first, Portland's schedule is pretty easy. So I imagine them to continue to be in the 3-4 seed mix. I think the Rockets will as well. And I think what they can do now is kind of figure out, as the season winds down, maybe those last 2-3 games, where they want to end up. Because I think if you had to pick, I don't think you'd want to play Golden State in the second round, right? But to your point, if Golden State starts to slip and they get to number two and Denver's number one, then you start to think about, okay, well, what's the disadvantage of us going to number four if we can then kind of control our matchup and then play Denver in the second round? So I think actually, to me, it's just about they are in a good position to figure it out as the season unwinds. This whole thing about Oklahoma City is very interesting to me because part of me is discounting this stretch a little bit because Paul George has been beaten up. But part of me is also wondering if teams in the league, in terms of scouting them, have caught up to them. And kind of the three-point shooting that they've gotten the benefit of the doubt on in the first half of the season has now tailored off a little bit. I don't know who they are yet. And if you ask me today, like, would I want to play them in a 4-5 matchup, I would say yeah, because I don't think they're as good, but that could change. That could change in another 3-4 weeks going into the playoffs. So it's just one of those things where I think you play it by ear and then you make the right decision coming down the stretch.
Remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and please subscribe to Locked On Rockets. jumping back into our Friday roundtable chat, calling it a weekend review with Karthik Prasad. You can follow him on Twitter at StanfordKP, or you can also follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Our first segment, we discussed the implications of playoff seeding. While clearly being in the top four, home court advantage in round one is a big deal for the Rockets, but there are certain seeding combinations to where maybe the number three seed isn't quite as important as we thought it was a week or two ago. It's still to be determined, and of course a lot of it's going to be dependent on what happens, not just in the Rockets games themselves, but also everything else going on in the Western Conference. This is the point of the year, late March, where scoreboard watching is very relevant. Karthik, I want to turn our discussion now, as we continue our way through Friday's show, into more Rockets-centric issues, not so much focused on the rest of the league, but what they can control. And heading into this matchup against the Spurs on Friday, overall, it's still really good. The Rockets have won 12 of 14, but they're coming off a frustrating loss on Wednesday in Memphis, a team that at 29 and 42, the Rockets should be better than. I know it was night two of a back-to-back on the road, third and four nights, but it's one on paper, especially with some harder games coming up, that you would like to think the Rockets could have gotten. They didn't. And I think we looked at this through different lenses. And some of it's kind of an occupational hazard with me because I have this daily show. I'm always thinking, what can you do to win this game? Because if the Rockets had gotten two more points somewhere, if Capella had gotten one more stop on Valanciunas, if one benefit of the doubt whistle would have gone Houston's way, then maybe you get the 2 points to flip the result Houston's way. And if that's the case, everything changes as far as the tone. For you, I know you look at things through a much more bigger picture lens. Where are they trying to go? And whether the Rockets won or lost that game, I could tell you were pretty frustrated specifically with some of the rest strategies. Gordon was out, and of course he's been a big part of their March surge. Nene, he was supposed to be out, then they kind of broke the glass on that in the second half once Valanciunas get going, but it didn't seem that that helped. Just explain your frustration from, I would say, a context perspective, because it seems like even if the Rockets had won that game, there were still some things that you were pretty frustrated about in terms of how the Rockets were managing the situation. Is that right?
Yeah, so, no, it's a good question. I mean, I put a lot of thought into it, and where I landed was the following. I mean, I think there's probably legitimate reasons that Eric Gordon and Kenneth Faried had to rest, although with Eric Gordon, it wasn't clear because they labeled it as a rest game. Mm-hmm. But going into it, then I think it felt like to me a series of compounding, what I would call questionable decisions. Because if Eric Gordon is out, then what is the logic behind starting Shumpert over a guy like House, who, you know, has been in the starting lineup, who can replicate some of Eric's shooting, who can still provide size and rebounding you know, to start the game? And I think they dug themselves a hole partially because of that starting lineup decision. So then, So that was the first thing where I thought, okay, well, why are they doing what they're doing? And then the second piece then was, once the game, you know, through, call it 80% of the game, when mid fourth quarter, they're still down by double digits and the starters were at 30 plus minutes, I thought to myself, okay, is it worth it for us to try and chase this win? Third game in four nights, back-to-back, you know, the fact is that James is banged up. Whether he doesn't want to rest or not, he's still banged up. And so what ended up happening was they then chased the win and ended up putting 45-plus minutes on a lot of guys. And I wondered, you know, would that have been the plan going in? Like, if you had asked D'Antoni or the front office or whoever, If we get to this position, do we want to burn our guys to try and chase this win? And I don't know that they would have. So it just felt like a series of compounding decisions that I think ended up in, you know, again, it's one game, it's one loss, it's not a big deal in the whole season scheme. But it just ended up being a worst case scenario where they burned a bunch of guys, they still lost. A lot of it felt self-inflicted. And so, as you said, I mean, my reaction was less about the game itself, because things happen. Memphis has actually been pretty good at home since the All-Star break. But it's more about, I just want to know what the logic and what the strategy is going forward, because we have 10 games left. This question of who do we rest, when do we rest them, and how do we get ourselves healthier for the playoffs is still a huge one in my mind. And, you know, when you see, you know, James having KT tape all over his back and wrist, it's hard not to wonder whether he's fine or not. Hard not to wonder if he could use a couple of extra days off. And so that's where I just want to think about, you know, what is the right strategy here, and how do they balance rest with seeding, like we talked about, with momentum and rhythm. So it's a tough decision, but it felt like that game was a series of just weird decisions looking back on it.
There's kind of an interesting dichotomy to it that you alluded to on your Twitter timeline, which is potentially the conflicting desires of Mike D'Antoni and the coaching staff versus Daryl Morey in the front office. And I'm not meaning to insinuate that there's some huge dispute there. I think, by and large, they're in alignment. But even with front offices and coaching staffs that are largely in alignment, there are just individual little things that can be out of sync. And I think you had a really good point, and I'd like you to elaborate on it, when you talked about how it seemed like starting Shumpert over House, for example, in place of Eric Gordon, was something that maybe was done to collect data on how does he play with this particular unit. But then there were other things, such as kind of breaking the glass on Nene. He was out for rest. Now, Fareed, they said it was a sore knee, so perhaps rest is a component of it, but at least there was a specific injury that they cited, unlike Nene. But to get back to, you know, saying Nene's out and then playing him for 6 minutes in the second half didn't go that well, in part because I'm not sure if Nene mentally was expecting to play in that game. So I kind of thought that you were on the right trail there. That resonated with me, that perhaps, you know, some of these decisions are dictated by the front office wanting to get data, but then you're also trying to balance it with Mike D'Antoni and the coaching staff doing everything they can to actually get a win.
Yeah, I mean, I think, that's exactly right. I mean, what they've said actually pretty consistently, especially with Shumpert in the recent weeks, is that they want to get these guys some minutes, and to me, that means getting enough of a sample size to understand what they have with certain guys. And Shumpert's the guy, because when we traded for him, he hadn't, you know, he dealt with a couple of injuries. We haven't seen what he can or can't do. And I think that to me was part of the rationale to start him, which again, that feels like a front office kind of collective decision on, hey, let's start him. We have this opportunity with Eric Gordon resting, et cetera. Let's get some more data. But then, exactly, I mean, the Nene decision really brought it home to me, which is either you decide, hey, like, if Mike D'Antoni wants to win the game, then why not play Nene earlier, especially against a team that has size, that is punishing. You see it unfolding in the first half. So I wasn't opposed to playing Nene. I just didn't understand the logic of breaking the glass in the third quarter, as you said. And so that's where you start to wonder, because I know Mike and even James Harden are wired to go get these wins, especially if they feel like they can, which when you have James Harden, no game is out of reach. And so that's where I think, you know, coming down the stretch, you have to fight some of these tendencies to go after and push yourself when you don't need to, because every extra minute here, every extra stretch that we push ourselves will add up. It has added up before. We've seen this game unfold in the past two seasons with going after going the extra mile. And so that's where, whether you talk about the data collection, but then you talk about bringing in players or going the extra mile to win, it felt like, again, it just didn't make any sense as the game unfolded. So I think you're absolutely right. It's worth monitoring as we go down the stretch.
Looking at the game through a one-game perspective rather than the trends, the rest, I want to get your take on, I guess, what encouraged you the most and what was the most concerning. And, of course, with the caveat, it's 1 of 82 and small sample sizes, that kind of stuff. For me, you know, you mentioned all the injuries with Harden, and that's very true. And at least to some degree, I think that's reflecting the fact that since the All-Star break, his shooting percentages have not been where they were before. So the thing that I like the most, of course, he had 57 points, but it reminded you that if the Rockets really need it, he's still capable of digging deep into his bag, so to speak, and pulling off one of those games that he had in December and in January. Even though they lost, and I know Memphis is not that great, it's impossible to do that for most guys, even against air. So I was encouraged by that. The flip side is that whatever's going on with Clint Capela since coming back, perhaps he's a little bit lighter. That's something that I've wondered about since he took 6 weeks off, and perhaps he couldn't lift with his thumb at that point. Maybe there's just some mental rust. But Boogie Cousins, DeAndre Ayton, Jonas Valanciunas, that's three guys in the last five games who have bullied him far too easily on the low block and gotten looks, just kind of old school basketball, a lot more easily than you would expect. So I would say Harden in a good way, Capella in a bad way were what stood out to me on Wednesday. What did you see just from an individual standpoint that was, I guess, simultaneously encouraging and discouraging in that 1-point loss in Memphis?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, to me, with James Harden, you see the greatness and the fact that he can do this, and so that was encouraging, as you said, and I just want him to be healthy, and so that's my main concern there. But yeah, he was able to, I thought, you know, beyond the scoring aspect, the mental toughness that he and then he showed and then brought to the team was really, really important, because we've seen this now maybe 5 or 6 times where, you know, end of the third, into the early fourth, down by double digits, and he just says, "Hey, I refuse to quit. Let's keep going, guys." And so in a one game vacuum, seeing that again is super encouraging, because they will need this in the playoffs at some point, right? The idea that he can rescue them, because not everything goes your way, and he, for him to keep pushing, keep bringing the effort, leading the guys, I think that shows the growth on his part, and it was evident again versus Memphis. And the Capella thing, you know, I've been thinking about that too. I mean, part of it is just the way we've designed our defense as well, because getting him in the paint on a one-on-one matchup versus a bigger dude, I think it is a matchup in the favor of the opposing offense. That's what they are trying to do if they have that level of personnel. And I'm not, I mean, the focus of the defense, especially if you think about what they're telling Capella to do, is to be able to switch, to be able to focus on the perimeter. And so then when he gets attacked, you know, over and over, in the paint, I mean, it's kind of bound to happen in my mind. So I'm not, I guess I'm on that, not overreacting.
Okay.
Cause I think it's a bit of just how teams want to attack if they can attack Houston. I mean, we saw this earlier in the season too, with teams like the Clippers, et cetera. And then I think the other thing is just, you know, we have been playing so well for so long, and part of it's just the constant banging adds up, I think, for Clint as he's working his way back. I don't know if he's lighter. I just think, again, I mean, the minutes are adding up, and so got to think about, you know, what he can do sustainably going forward, and I'm not too worried about him. I think the other discouraging aspect to me was Shumpert, because I really want to see him. I want to see what if he can or can't bring anything, and I just didn't see the fit. You know, minutes aside, putting him in the starting lineup aside, the fit of is he willing to shoot? Does he have the quick trigger? Is he locking down on defense? I just didn't see anything yet, and so that's a little bit discouraging considering what they gave up for him. But I mean, I think it's just maybe he'll continue to improve. I don't know, but that was just the other thing that caught my mind.
With the Capella dynamic, I understand why you're not as concerned. A lot of Rockets fans, they worry not just about what's going on with Clint, but the lack of depth behind him. One question I've had posed at me a lot is, do they need to go out and get one more traditional big, because Nene has been so frequently unavailable of late? Now, Mike D'Antoni says it's because you want him and think that he'll be better prepared for the playoffs at this point. But then, you know, the Warriors just brought in Andrew Bogut. We know Marcin Gortat is still out there. Are you satisfied with Capella, Nene, and Fried? I think I am. Or do you see any validity to the arguments? I've had some of them presented to me that you want one more potentially traditional big by the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I'm strongly in the camp of we do not need another big, and here's why. I think the way we play defense and offense, continuity and knowledge of the system is so critical. I mean, we, especially for the center position, you're relying on those split second decisions and being forced to, you know, switch out onto the perimeter and make sure you're funneling guys in the right way. Like, for someone to come in 2 weeks before the playoffs and trying to get up to speed, and let alone have the minutes and opportunity to get up to speed, I just don't see it. And I think that's why they're preserving Nene, because they know what he can bring if he's healthy and ready, and he knows the system, et cetera. And Fried has gotten, you know, a much longer 3 to 4 month runway now to figure things out. And so I'm less worried about that come playoff time. The only argument you can make is, could you bring in someone for 10 days or call up Hartenstein to help give you some size closing down the regular season, so you don't have a game like Memphis, right? Where if you need the exercise, where you, where you need the rebounding, you'll have that on the bench. That I could see that, but for the playoffs, I don't think it would be fruitless, I think, to try and add someone to get up to speed.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with you on that. You could see that be something they target with their next 10-day. I believe early next week is when the 2-week period that they have after the 2 10-days they gave to Terrence Jones, they let him walk so they can be under the 14-player limit for 2 weeks. I believe that expires early next week, so they are going to bring in someone on a 10-day, perhaps short-term to end the season. They bring in another big body. But in the playoffs, assuming those three are healthy, I think they're fine there. Karthik, last question for you. This is the first time that we have chatted since the Daniel House Jr. contract stalemate got resolved. And one thing that's interesting, had it not been resolved and they chose to play hardball, this Sunday would have been March 24th, the first time that he was eligible to come back. Because the Rockets ultimately relented a couple of weeks early, he's been instrumental, and really he's the only reason why, or one of the only reasons, I should say, that you won the Phoenix and Atlanta games, which could have gone the other direction if he wasn't out there playing so well. And of course, he could be viable tonight against the Spurs. He played well in Memphis, even though they lost that game by one. So the past couple of weeks, he's clearly been a big deal. And beyond just his presence, which you touched on him earlier, I do think it speaks pretty well to the flexibility of the front office. I know the national narrative with regards to Daryl Morey is kind of rigid in terms of the analytics, the money ball. But this is a situation where, to me, it speaks well in that from a math standpoint, there was no real need for the Rockets to relent early. They could have dug in and drug this out until the end of the season to see if House would cave on a multi-year deal. And of course, it might put them in a better position down the road. I think clearly the biggest reason that they quote unquote caved early was to benefit this year's team. And that's exactly what is happening. So not just from House the individual, but I would say Rockets holistically, the organizational philosophy. What did you take out of this decision to not take it to the deadline and ultimately on March 12th, whatever it was, concede and bring him back in the fold?
Well, I think first it was, to me, a show or a sign of good faith. Mm-hmm. Converting him early, couple weeks early, puts more money in Daniel House's pocket. It also signals to him that, hey, we do value what you bring and we really need your help and want you to be part of the team. So that's, you know, it's a qualitative, maybe softer aspect of it, but I think it will help come the summer when you think about the negotiations and what will happen with House and trying to retain him. So I saw it as a sign of good faith. And then second, I think you're right. I mean, the issues the team had with him out, which was having that wing that could attack off of closeouts, help on the boards, and still shoot at a high clip from three. I mean, they knew what they had in house and what they needed. And I think they made a decision, hey, let's push because we have the home court and the seating's in front of us. And so that felt like let's not waste a good opportunity to get him up to speed and then also keep our seating hopes alive. And so I thought it was a good decision. Again, they were a bit constrained before they converted him in terms of trying to balance the luxury tax and the other implications. But I thought, you know, it felt like to me that this was a more likely plan than waiting for March 24th, just because I don't think their goal was trying to play hardball in so much as it was getting him as early as he can with the constraint of still being under the luxury tax. So that felt like the first thing that they were optimizing for rather than, hey, let's play super hardball with him. Because I think they want him. And sometimes, you know, the softer, hey, we really need you and we'll negotiate in good faith in the summer took precedence.
That makes sense. Folks, you can follow him on Twitter @StanfordKP. Look forward to having you back soon, buddy.
Thanks. Always appreciate these opportunities and have a good weekend, Ben.
You too. Good stuff there with Karthik. Again, you can follow him on Twitter @StanfordKP, where you can also follow me @BenDubose and the show @LockedOnRockets. So I think at this point we can put a bow on today's episode because, well, a lot of the things we've discussed, they make it outdated relatively quickly depending on what happens on the floor tonight. A massive game for the Rockets at home against their I-10 rivals, the San Antonio Spurs. Whatever happens, we'll be right here at Locked On Rockets to break it down shortly afterward. We'll probably wait until Saturday morning, but who knows, if it's an epic enough game, we might break in tonight as well. Stay tuned. if you want to know right when the episode comes out, even before I'm able to post it to my aforementioned Twitter timeline, the best way that you can be ready for it is to subscribe. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, also the new Himalaya podcast app. You can subscribe to Locked On Rockets at any of those. Remember, when you get in your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets, and you can find our most recent episode that way as well. Also, LockedOnRockets.com, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Those are other ways that you can get prior episodes of the show, or you can also get in contact with me, ask me questions about the team, suggestions for the show. LockedOnRockets@gmail.com is our email address beyond just the website and Facebook account. All of those are ways that you can access prior content and also get in touch with me about the team, the show, any questions you may have. So with that and those plugs complete, I'm going to get ready to go out to Toyota Center in a little bit. Should be a fun environment tonight. Hopefully I'll see some of you guys there. As always, thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Karthik Prasad for joining us. And please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily discussion of Houston Rockets basketball.